Ryan's immediate impulse to the accusation from Chris Akimoto had been to totally and blankly deny it. But there was such unquestioned confidence in the young man's voice that he guessed that there was little point. And it could easily have made a very difficult situation much, much worse. To be spotted as the right-hand man of the notorious traitor might literally prove fatal. The old man's ideal for an enemy was for him to be dead. But over the years, enough people had escaped, brimming with hatred for Traitor and his men, to make it a potential hazard. Ryan knew how distinctive he looked, even though Deathlands was filled with men with an eye missing, or a hand, or a leg, or an arm, or an ear. But Akimoto didn't seem the sort of person who could be bluffed. It was time to bite hard on the bullet and be ready to move fast.
I rode with the Traitor for years. Sorry, but I don't recall having crossed trails with you.
Out of the corner of his eye, Ryan noticed that Dean was deep in eager conversation with the boys on either side of him, looking as though he'd known them all his life.
More of the treacle pudding, Mr. Carter?
No. No thanks, Natalie.
Remember me? Why should you remember, Mr. Carter? I was a child of 11 years old when my parents were butchered and Traitor came into my life.
Your parents were killed by Traitor? By his people from the Warwags?
No. You misunderstand me. I'm obviously not making myself plain.
Where was all this? Gives me a decent clue to hang a memory onto.
My mom and dad ran a small grocery store out near Memphis. Littleville called Yesteryear. One of the post-Nukevilles. They had some hard times and grief being from Oriental stock, but all that passed. Me and my brothers and sisters learned how to give back better than we got. And gradually, things became all right. Became good.
That rings the small bell. Wasn't there some kind of rebirth of the clan?
That's it. You do remember. It started in the east. Some said they came from old Georgia, but they were intent on riding off anyone who wasn't a white Anglo. They came to Yesteryear.
All around them, the meal was coming to an end. Nicholas Brody rose to his feet.
There will be tea in the staff room, Mr. Carter, if you would care to join us.
I promised to show Mr. Carter the grounds after supper, Natalie, before full dark, but I'll bring him back in 15 minutes or so.
In the evening cool, alongside the limpid water of the lake, Chris carried on his story.
My parents wouldn't move, and most of the good folks in the ville supported them. Until the night of the burning. Traitor had arrived and your war wags were camped by a creek a half mile west. He'd bought plenty of provisions from our store.
The clan came that night, and they burned you out, I remember. Your parents were shot, and their bodies thrown in the flames. And you kids escaped by
the storm cellar of the Reverend Mr. Dexter, true Christian. We heard Mom and Dad's screams. I still hear them. The leaders of the clan made a big mistake. They thought Traitor would be on their side.
That was a big mistake, all right. Nothing Traitor hated as much as hatred. The Imperial Wizard, or whatever he was, rode up the next morning, bold as brass with a dozen of his thugs. Asked for help in finding you kids. Said, what was it? We got the mongrel and his bitch. Might as well clean out the whole litter.
And Traitor hanged him. Him and all his crew. From a line of live oaks by the creek.
Yeah, I remember.
Then Traitor took a day off to rebuild the store for us and left a hat full of Jack to restock it. Place is running still, with my older brother and two sisters there. Anytime you're near Yesteryear.
Thanks, Chris. Is it all right if I call one of my son's teachers by his first name?
Sure can. What I wanted to say, swinging down all the years, was thanks.
Mildred browsed around the first floor of the isolated house, while Christy slowly climbed the stairs.
We'll only have a quick look. Best get Doc and the others up here as soon as possible, before dark. Start a fire and we can all have a really good, warm, secure night.
I saw some cans on the shelves in the kitchen. Depends on what they are, but some of them might still be usable and safe.
There were three rooms opening off the landing. The first was a bathroom, with thick towels folded neatly on a chair. But when Christy tried to pick one up, it crumbled into powdery dust between her fingers. There was a dry smell in the house, a smell of stillness and antiquity. The second of the doors was half open. Christy peered in. The sterile room had obviously once been a guest bedroom. A faded watercolor of Glenwood Springs hung on one wall, and a floral duvet covered a narrow double bed. Christy went to the last of the rooms, where the door was closed.
Christy! You all right? Some of the electrics still work. Must be solar panels, but they sure built them to last.
Yeah, I'm fine. Just going into the last of the rooms up here.
Christy!
I'm fine. But I was wrong. The owners of the house are still here.
What?
In there.
They lay side by side, wizened hands locked together, on a large bed beneath a picture window that looked west toward the setting sun. The flesh had long, long gone, and all that remained were the dark brown sinews that held together the loosened bones. She had been blonde or gray, and he had been mainly bald. Strands of their hair had flowed together on the pillow, just as the juices of their decaying corpses had flowed together, staining the bed and the carpet beneath it. She wore a pantsuit and sneakers. He was dressed in casual pants and a shirt beneath a patterned sweater. His feet were bare bones.
Ugh. Looks like they picked the time and place of their going.
Mildred walked to a glass-topped table that held a ceramic doll and picked up an empty bottle of pills, peering at the label.
Yeah. They knew what they were doing, all right. Is there a note?
I think this is it.
There was an envelope propped up by a photograph of a smiling couple blinking into the sun on a ski slope, arms around each other.
To whom it might concern. I don't know whether we should open this.
Well, let's see what the others think. Sun's down. We could move these remains out of the room and bring in some more wood. They left a fire ready laid in the hearth, and we don't know how long the electricity will hold out after all this time.
Once the rest of the companions had been gathered, they placed the corpses in the garage next to a large crimson wag with a frozen engine. Jack brought in wood, and there was a healthy fire in the living room. Doc sat on the sofa, his knee boots resting on a piece of old towel he'd found in the kitchen, so as not to make the material muddy. He was holding the envelope that Christy had shown him.
What is the consensus of opinion on this? Should we read it or not?
Not.
Read it. Yeah, sorry, Millie, but I agree with Jack. It's a keyhole into the past. Don't get chances like this all that often. I say read it.
What do you think, Christy?
One thing's for sure. It can't hurt the folks who wrote it.
They knew now that the couple had been a Mr. and Mrs. Mark Rosenberg, and that he'd been an orthodontist. They had three children, all in their 20s, who had left home and lived in Boston, New York, and Albuquerque.
Then I will open it. Not very long.
Christy sat on the floor, tucking her feet under her. Jack leaned back against one of the padded chairs, while Mildred sat in another. J.B. stood by the window, looking out at the last speck of deep, deep red on the western horizon.
It is signed by both of them at the bottom. It begins, May God forgive us, but we can see no point in trying to carry on. The phones and radio and TV are all down, as they have been for several days, ever since the skies darkened. Interesting that they use that phrase, sky dark, so soon after the nuclear holocaust.
Go on, Doc.
Very well. We know now that the world has ended. The world we knew and loved is gone forever, and we are alone in it. The road is blocked both ways, and no plows have come through. They will never come again. The last news was of the ruin of the great cities, which must mean the deaths of our beloved children. Some sort of radiation sickness is gripping us both. We are finding our nails and teeth are becoming loose, and our gums bleed. We know enough to realize that the future is short and bloody and bleak. Best we do what we have decided now, before it becomes impossible. This way there can still be affection and dignity. A time and way of our own choosing. Oh, dear.
This sort of thing must have been repeated thousands of times, perhaps millions. Once they realized there was no hope at all...
Doc tucked away his kerchief.
There is just a little more. As soon as I finish writing this, we will go upstairs and take the drugs, perhaps washing them down with our last bottle of good brandy. No point in leaving it behind. It is a pity, but I do not think that I can write any more. God bless America, and God bless you all. Try to understand and to forgive. May those who come after remember us in their prayers. And then they've both signed it.
And they went up to the bedroom and drank the brandy and took the pills. Lay down together and held hands and slipped gently away from the horror that life had become. Best way out.
Doc stood shakily and moved to the fire. He threw the papers onto the flames. Mildred and JB slept in the main bedroom. Doc was given the bed in the spare room. Christy picked the sofa for herself, while Jack scavenged in the garage and found a camp bed with an inflatable mattress. It revealed a very slow leak, but it held up enough for him to fall asleep in a corner of the living room, close to the window. For some time, Christy had difficulty falling asleep. She found herself thinking of the tragic ending of the owners of the beautiful house, and how that same tragedy had to have been repeated countless times, as JB had said, all through Deathlands. Eventually, a dawn light broke through a gap in the dark brown velvet draperies, and Christy woke from the sleep she had managed to salvage. She could smell the glowing embers of the night's fire and the wonderful scent of fresh coffee coming from the brightly lit kitchen. Christy pushed herself off the couch and joined her friends in the kitchen. Everyone else had slept pretty well, and Doc in particular seemed a new man, back to his old form. Mildred had given her approval to some sealed foil packages of scrambled eggs with ham and peppers, and Doc served them piping hot from a skillet. They had opened some cans of dough that they had heated in the electric oven, finding that they came out as crescent-shaped rolls, soft and buttery. They had also brewed more coffee.
Think it would be possible to actually live up here and get the house going again?
Need reliable transport. Come the winter, you could be locked in here for 3 or 4 months. Doubt the electrics would cope if they were used too much. Heating would be difficult with only one fireplace. And you wouldn't be able to grow too much fruit and vegetables at this altitude and on an exposed scarp like this. Plenty of game, but on balance, it'd be rad-blasted hard.
I guess in those techno days, the road would have been swept clear and you could get groceries and stuff delivered from Leadville or Glenwood Springs. And all kinds of repairmen at the other end of a phone.
Jack had just had a hot bath upstairs and came down with his long white hair plastered to his skull and shoulders.
You die here in the winter.
I'll do the washing up. Maybe we should be going.
The hot bath idea seems admirable, though I see little point in washing the plates. It has been a century since anyone came this way last, and it will be probably another 100 years before anyone returns. By then I think that the old house will be a mass of tumbled timber.
You can live like a pig in muck, Doc, but I was raised not to leave dirty dishes around. There's plenty of hot water from the boiler to the fire if we all want hot baths.
Oh, that sounds like a good idea. Ryan will wait for us up at Fair Play.